I was a fit, strong, capable person. I could do 13 pull-ups and 3 sets. I could go kite surfing. I could jump on a bicycle and do 100 miles just for fun. And the body that I was then sat in, I couldn't even relate to it. It was a pathetic, broken mess as far as I was concerned. The accident, despite 2 reconstructed body parts and now living with quite a lot of ongoing pain, I'd say the mental health has definitely been the harder side of it to recover from. I live and manage chronic pain in my right hip now. It's just a constant thing that's there and it sucks. The lady had taken so much from me already. I could not let her take more. I hate the word influencer. It like makes my blood kind of dirty, yeah.
Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on 2 wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Right, it's going to be a good one today. Today's guest is a global sensation, an adventurer, a motivational speaker, someone who, let's just say, had a life-changing experience which made her now value life and live it to the absolute max. She's got a huge following on all of her social media. You'll know her best as the girl on the bike, but it is, of course, Vanessa Ruck.
Hello, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being on, Vanessa. The pleasure is absolutely all ours. I mean, there's so much to talk about, so much to get stuck into, but we've got to work out where this all comes from. Where does the seed of loving 2 wheels come from for you?
Honestly, really random. Most people think I've been riding all my life, or I've had bikes as a kid or family, dad or something. I had a curveball in life in 2014, which was just a punch in the face, really, is what life throws at us. And through my recovery from that, I discovered motorbikes. So I've only been riding motorbikes for, what is that, like 10 years, 11 years. And I think the mental health side of it was probably the biggest factor as to why the motorbikes started and then just went full life addiction. And the only way to then describe the rest of everything I've done is it escalated.
just a bit. Now, I follow you on social and I love the way you approach life now, in terms of, you know, before we get into this, but before it was all about career, you know, working hard, doing as well as you can. But now it's more about grabbing life by the horns and enjoying every moment. For those who don't know, you said, you know, a bit of a curveball moment. It was a massive, massive thing that happened to you. And some people would assume you have a big accident, you're going to stay away from anything dangerous. But for you, as you said, it was the opposite. You fell in love with bikes. And explain, if you can, a little bit, if you don't mind, going into the accident and what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably worth noting that I was an adrenaline junkie before my accident and I lived for extreme sports. I was really fit and active. It was a very normal Tuesday and I got on my bicycle. I was not an active motorbike rider. I didn't have bikes and I was a commuter on a bicycle. So I did 16 miles a day on the bike without even thinking about it. That was just getting to the desk. Got on the bike. It was a beautiful sunny Tuesday. I was on the way to the wakeboarding lake to meet my husband and some friends, because I was just always out chasing fitness when I wasn't in the office, and got about a mile down the road and a car decided not to stop at their red light. And it was as simple as that. I went straight into the side of the car. Now, I wasn't a bleeding mess or anything graphic. You know, I wasn't scraped up by paramedics, but I was pretty shaken up, went to hospital and an ambulance. And I was later discharged that night with bruising. So feeling pretty positive, shaken up. Now, if we fast forward 7 years, which was the bulk of my recovery, I've since had 7 surgeries, including a reconstructed right shoulder and right hip. So bruising versus what actually happened and that impact kind of gives you an idea of the sort of battle and fight it's been over the years to ultimately try and get myself back to a point that I'm pain-free. I have had to readjust my expectations. Pain-free isn't something that's feasible for my home. And instead, get to a point where I can adapt and I can keep getting up every day and trying to keep focused, do what I need to do to keep my body going and not quit. Do what I can do in life, really. So, yeah, a lot of surgeries, two on my shoulder, five on my hip. I've got a 95% certainty of needing more hip surgery, but I'll deal with that when I find the strength to get to that. And I live and manage chronic pain in my right hip now. It's just a constant thing that's there and it sucks. There's no way of describing it any other way. I have to do a lot of mindfulness to cope with that. But I think the mindfulness is the only way to deal with it for me, I suppose. I discovered a lot of things about mental health through my recovery. I was diagnosed with change disorder, depression, fear of the road. Yeah, it doesn't really end. You just have to get your first motorbike. And no, my mum wasn't pleased when I came up with that idea. It was definitely progressive. It wasn't like when I decided to get a motorbike, I was then thinking in 2024, I'm going to do the original Dakar, one of the toughest races in the world. It's definitely been stepping stones. And that's, I think, really important to explain. And it was really hard to get on a motorbike. Like, it took a lot of strength and a lot of tears. But the accident, despite two reconstructed body parts and now living with quite a lot of ongoing pain, I'd say the mental health has definitely been the harder side of it to recover from. And I think it's really easy people to look at what I'm doing and think that I've just got it all figured out and every day I'm positive and I'm going after everything. And I just really want to emphasize people that I'm a human too. And, you know, my energy, my ability to handle life, pain, everything varies as well.
So, I mean, saying all that, Vanessa, there's so much in that to unpack and to really kind of, I say work out, and this is from the outside looking in. It's quite obvious that you've got quite a big thing every single day to climb over. And it sounds like you're preparing yourself and arming yourself with the tools to be able to do that. I suppose people listening to this, and it's possibly the same thing that you and I are thinking right now, is how do you then get in the headspace to think that motorcycling is your next port of call? Do you think it's something inherently defining about what's happened to get you up and on a motorboat?
There was a lot of determination. That is for true. I think once I got labelled as fear of the road, and the depression one really hit me the most, where it was like, all right, fine. I can feel it. I can see it. I was in a really dark place. Like I was really struggling. I wasn't doing well. I mean, just another thing to mention, my surgeries weren't all in one go. It was one surgery a year for 7 years. So I'd have a surgery. This was the last surgery. This was going to be it. I was going to be fixed. And I'd go for my rehab, get to sort of the higher point of the roller coaster as such, where I'm more able, I'm getting more active, maybe able to get a motorbike. And then things were missed, complications, and I'd be back down, bed bound, unable to go to loo on my own, all that kind of stuff. And it went again, one every year. So the highs and lows of it were crazy. Getting on a motorcycle, I think, was, there's a huge amount of just stubbornness. Like, I didn't want to be labelled with that. This lady that hit me had completely changed the world as I knew it. I didn't even see myself as me. I talked about myself in the third person. Like, I was a fit, strong, capable person. I could do 13 pull-ups and 3 sets. I could go kite surfing. I could jump on a bicycle and do 100 miles just for fun. And the body that I was then sat in, I couldn't even relate to it. It was a pathetic, broken mess as far as I was concerned. And the lady had taken so much from me already. I could not let her take more. It would have been really easy for me to just go, you know what? I'm broken. I just need to take up knitting, watch Netflix, feel sorry for myself. You know, it's all her fault. I didn't have a choice. You know, that kind of victim mindset. And I was like, no. Because I'm still alive and I still have the choice. Maybe my actions today won't change my tomorrow. It's not that quick. But my actions today, tomorrow, this week, next month, maybe my next year, I do still have the choice and the control to help myself and do things that will make my future look different. I mean, in the last couple of years, I've actually been able to start running again. I'm going to be honest, it hurts. And I know that I need more surgery. And I know that the running will damage my body and make that surgery sooner. But I was told that was never going to be something I'd do again. And I'm like, no, I'm going to get myself strong enough because I'm in control and I'm not going to let you just label me. Mm-hmm. I think there's a benefit as well, maybe, that I grew up with horses around. And I don't know if you know ponies very well, but I think they only have one purpose in life, and that is to get riders on the ground. Mm. So I did a lot of falling off ponies. And when you fall off, you get back on, basically.
It's no surprise to either of us that you do a lot of motivational speaking because you clearly have such resilience to sort of say, this is not going to beat me.
Staggering.
It's not going to define me. Yeah, it's amazing. But I think what you were describing, everything you've been through, you literally were a professional sportswoman, you know, and it's like, you know, an athlete being told they can no longer do what they love doing. It's that loss of identity, you having to rebuild not just your body physically, but your mind mentally. And I think it's credit to you that you go out and, like you said, running you know hurts you, but you're going to do it because you can do it. And I think that's amazing. Where would you describe where you're at right now in terms of what you do for a living? Because it's a very different path that you perhaps were going to go on. And because of this accident, because of this dealt, the card that you were dealt, you've changed everything about your life. What would you describe as your 9-to-5 job then? What do you do now? Influencer, motivational speaker?
I hate the word influencer.
Yeah, I thought you would. I thought you would.
Kind of, yeah.
But you do motivate
people,
don't you?
No,
I get that. But from what you do on your social media, people will take inspiration and they'll take heart from that for people that may be going through a bit of a dark time or having that loss of identity themselves. You are credit to yourself, and you must give people that light that, hang on, Vanessa's got through worse than I have. She can do it. I can do it. And you must be proud of that.
I am proud of that. I genuinely don't say that lightly. I am proud because I basically turned the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It took me 6 years to realize this, but it's now probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I wouldn't be doing any of the things that I'm doing now if that accident hadn't happened. Okay, I wouldn't have the pain. That would be quite amazing. Mm. But I wouldn't be riding bikes. I wouldn't have now ridden in 35 different countries. I wouldn't have done some of the toughest races. And I think the strength of getting through that accident has given me so much strength and so much more awareness and grounding of, like, what's worth getting upset over, having more appreciation for what I do have around me, saying yes to, like, any crazy opportunities that come up because I'm alive and I can, like, let's go out and do this. I woke up a few weeks ago and was like, I fancy jumping out of an aeroplane today. 3 hours later, I got on an aeroplane. It was one of those random days where I was actually able to make that happen because I was in Hunter Valley in Australia. And yeah, I jumped. It was my sixth jump and I just did it because I could. And right now I'm definitely in a slightly more wild chapter, which isn't a chapter, it's like a novel, because I've now got a 16-month-old daughter. And so I'm in, like, motherhood as well. And I just want to make sure I'm showing her that I've got even more drive to get up and say yes every day because she's watching me. I'm also really good at just going blah, 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 blabbering, kind of ping-ponging. So...
No, it's made for a podcast, that, but it's a bigger problem if you don't say anything for myself and you, because me and him have got to make small talk. I suppose that you mentioned about having a daughter, and she's only did it at the moment, and the example that you're setting to, it's amazing your thought process, because I think you would admit it's slightly different to the norm, isn't it, of how you want to show your daughter what it is to be a fully functioning adult woman in all different respects and all different kind of walks of life. That does that temper anything? I'm sure there's logistics with biking and traveling, and you've got to take that into account, but does that temper anything with regards to what you think you should or shouldn't do? I just get the feeling it doesn't.
It doesn't, but it does. I will be honest, nature is very good at making sure their mums stay alive. And so I do not have the same risk factor for myself as I used to. So I was in Spain hard enduro riding.
You have just told us that you've jumped out of a plane for the sixth time. You do understand that, don't you?
If you can't die jumping out of a plane. Well, you die hitting the ground. You worry about that a bit later.
I mean, isn't that technically semantics?
I don't know. It's crazy. In my head, I don't see jumping out of a plane as dangerous.
But you, like you said earlier, you've always been that adventure seeker, that thrill seeker, haven't you? So what's normal to you might be so out of the norm to someone who sits behind an office desk 9 to 5. But what I want to know is your passion for motorbikes. Obviously, it came to you later in life and it was this twist of fate that got you into it. But in terms of where you've ridden, I think you said 35 countries, you know, and you've ridden some of the toughest terrains. I mean, you're clearly good on a bike. Did it come naturally to you when you first got on a bike? Do you think, hang on, this feels easy, I love it?
Oh, no. God, it was terrifying. I was like Bambi, getting on the road bike, it started on the road. That I did take to quite naturally. I was a petrol head growing up. You know, my dad taught me to drive when I was 13. I got my driving license 16 days after my 17th birthday. Like, I did it. My car probably could have been a max power. Like, I was a petrol head. So I think that's important for like the clutch control and the sort of mechanical mindset you need for riding a bike. I did get that. When I then went off road for the first time, if you were a bike rider and you've never been off road, when you go off road, honestly, I don't think it's just me. It's like your Bambi on ice. Yes. I mean, it's terrifying. Like, everything moves. You have no control. The bike's trying to go in every direction other than the direction that you were intending to go in. And yeah, it was just like knocked me down. But I think one of my strengths is being able to listen to advice or instruction and apply it and remember it quite easily. So when I do get tips off people, or I feel all that worked or something did well, I'm quite good at then remembering it and progressing. So I have developed my skill incredibly quickly. I mean, to go from riding off-road for the first time to doing the original Dakar in, I think it was an 8-year period with 4 hip surgeries in that period, I definitely threw myself into trying to get as good at riding as I could as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that you continually keep saying, Vanessa, that doesn't stagger me in the sense of what you're doing, how you approach it, your mindset when it comes to being able to get yourself in that headspace to actually just go and do it. I mean, and given, of course, coming to motorcycling slightly later, that want and need to get through the steps to make sure that you get to, well, gives yourself the foundation, the platform to get to where you want to go. When you took your test, was that relatively, I mean, given what you've been through, was it relatively straightforward? Was it something that you remember? Can you remember that when the instructor turned around and said, congratulations, crack on?
So I did actually do my test when I was at university, which was, don't make me do the maths, a couple of years before the accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Like maybe five or 6 years, 1 year, a month. I'm really young. It was a bit before the accident. I'm one of those people that is collecting licenses. Yeah. So
boxing it off. Tick. Yep.
I did my motorbike license because I was like, I can and I should. Mm. I had a tiny little like moped-y bike. I lived in the Bahamas for a bit during my university course and I couldn't afford a car. So I got this little cheap thing from China to get around the island. And when I came home, I thought I should probably get my full license. So I did. I don't remember it being challenging. I just did a 5-day direct access course, which I don't think you can even do. No, you can't do anymore. No. You have to stage it out. Unless
different modules now, isn't it?
Yeah. See, I'm showing my age. Stop making me feel really old.
That wasn't my intention. I'm so sorry. The other question that I was going to ask off the back of what you just said there, what uni course sends you to the Bahamas? That's amazing.
Yeah, so I did international business studies. I had a exchange program where I went to university in America, in North Carolina, for a semester. Uh-huh. And yes, university is just like in the movies, those massive frat house parties and stuff. It
the
was
red
wild.
Cups. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And then I had a 1-year industrial work placement. I was the only person on my course that did a work placement overseas. Everyone else did them in the UK. But it's international business. Why would I stay in the UK? It was hard to find a work placement overseas. And I ended up doing marketing and PR for a marine biology research and sustainability company on a remote island in the Bahamas, unpaid, but they covered all my costs. And it was epic.
Amazing. You need to write a book. Your life has been, apart from the accident, and I get the surgeries that have come with it, which have not been nice at all. You've had a great life by the sounds of it in terms of, you know, you're doing what you love doing now. You've clearly traveled the world. You've met some fantastic people. You're an inspirational mother. I mean, what is next for you? I mean, I'm assuming there's always an adventure on the horizon for
you. Yeah, but the book is coming. I have been writing it. Writing it for about 4 years, and it's painful to write, especially some of the emotional stuff. But I have set my goal, and I am going to get it ready to print, either self-publish or ready to print, and hopefully a publisher will pick it up off me by the end of this year. That's my goal. It's happening. So hopefully it will be a book next year. No, it will be. Sorry. It will be. I'm doing it. The book is coming.
We can see the way your mind works. There's no room for doubt, is there? And if there is, that gets binned pretty quickly. Yeah, that's. I've got absolutely no doubt that next year there'll be a book with your name on it telling your story, Vanessa. It's a given, I think. Let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping just while we're here. It gives me a chance to take a breath with all this adrenaline. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So, Vanessa, let's actually talk about the hardware, the motorcycles themselves. So you pass your test. Do you jump on something big and powerful straight away? Do you work up to something big and powerful? What have you got at the moment?
Is this what I'd recommend somebody else do or what I did?
No, this is all you.
So
all
you. I got a Suzuki Bandit 600, and it was a little, I'd say it's not little, sorry. It was a commuter bike. And that's where it started after the accident, because I couldn't cycle to work anymore. At the high points where I was able to ride a bike, I was just really struggling with the cost of petrol, parking, traffic going into Oxford. And I just came randomly. It was a Friday night, gin and tonic with a couple of friends. They must have been really boring because I was just like daydreaming off. And I was like, I should get a motorbike. And I found the Suzuki Bandit, like I think it was on eBay the following day. It was in my town, like 6 minutes from my house for a really reasonable price, an old one. And so I got it. And that was it. I had to go buy all the bike kit and helmets and all that kind of stuff. Then I had to ride it. That was the hardest part. Mm-hmm. And what no one pre-warned me when I got that bike is that motorbikes breed.
They do.
I've never heard that before. That's such a great way of putting it.
Vanessa, you said earlier, you touched upon your mother wasn't that happy about you riding a motorbike. What did your immediate family and friends think off the back of the serious accident you had when you then said, do you know what, I'm gonna get into motorbikes now? Was it met with a bit of a, oh, don't do that? Or we can tell from your personality, you're going to do what you want anyway. But yeah. What objections did you come up against when you started biking? Or has everyone been okay with it?
Husband was fine with it because I think he probably was like, kind of cool, wife wants a bike. He had his bike license as well, but didn't have bikes. But he grew up with a dad and it was around bikes, but didn't have bikes. So he was like fine with it. My mum and dad definitely tried to put me off. They were a lot more cautious, worried, you know, it's not a good thing to do. I know as a teenager, there was no way I was allowed a boyfriend that had a motorbike. But I wasn't a teenager anymore. So they will listen to this podcast, but they know that they can't really tell me I can't do something. And if they do, that might result in some heels going in and I might then want to do it even more kind of thing. Although I do really do love, respect and listen to my parents. With the motorbikes, that didn't happen. I got the motorbike. And you wear the right kit. And honestly, I do, maybe not initially, but I do feel safer on a motorbike than on a bicycle. Hmm. Because you are a, you know, you pay your tax. Hmm. If anyone's listening on the audio podcast, I'm doing little hands in the air because obviously that's irrelevant. You're allowed, you're meant to be on the road as such, and you've got more presence and size and you're wearing protection. You're not in like Lycra.
Yeah. Yeah, with just the little helmet on the top. I only really ventured into the cycling world once, Vanessa, and once I got my head around the fact that everyone in a car wants to kill you, she was like, all right, I get it now. I totally get it. But then because you're always taught, aren't you, to be, when you are on a motorcycle, not necessarily be aggressive with the way that you place the bike, but be dominant in the lane, because that's your lane. You deserve to be there, regardless of whether something's coming past you with four wheels. But With you mentioned about bikes breeding, such a great way of putting it. Does that then mean that there's a long meandering journey with different bikes? Where are you at now? Do you get manufacturers coming to you saying, do you want to ride a bike for a little bit? Do you have a nice freedom of choice with stuff like that?
Yeah, so there's 9 bikes in the garage. Amazing. But I'm going to be honest, they don't get that much riding because I am really fortunate that I get to work with lots of different brands and all the different countries I ride in. I tend to, you know, get a bike in country, whether it's a press loan or with a company that I'm working with on their bikes. But as far as my bike, so I went from the Suzuki Bandit. Mm-hmm. So on our honeymoon, we rode Harleys in Texas, just as a random thing. Very and cool. My husband was away in Afghanistan in the Air Force when we had our first wedding anniversary. So when he came back, I organized for 2 Harleys for an afternoon with zero intention to buy. And yeah, we ended up buying 2 in a week, early life crisis. But it was the best decision in my mental health in my whole recovery, honestly, because I was at a point where, again, I was at the higher point between surgeries, but I didn't really see the point of much. Like, why would you take holiday once I was back at work to do what? A spa holiday, city break? Like, no, thank you. All of our holidays were sports, whether it was snow kiting or climbing, whatever it was. And the Harley made me realize that I could have a bit of adrenaline, wind in the hair, adventure. I mean, the torque of a Harley Davidson is unbelievable. They will pull off the line faster than most bikes. Yeah, they might not go as quick, but it's like a sofa. Unbelievable. So over the next 3 years, between the ups and downs, we did like 25,000 miles on them around Europe, 15 countries, and they became our new thing. I then was bedbound after hip surgery and woke up one day and decided I wanted a dirt bike. So that was the next bike, breeding. Surround yourself with people that say yes when you come up with crazy ideas. My husband was like, what? Are you serious? Like, you can't even get to the toilet on your own. And I was like, I know, but can I get a dirt bike? I think the adrenaline in me, or adrenaline junkie in me, had already fallen in love with motorbikes, but I missed the physical side of riding. Because sitting on a Harley, you don't need to be fit and strong. You can just ride them relatively easily, depending on how hard you're riding them, obviously. And then the dirt bike was like, that's the off-road, the sweat, the physical side. We went out and got me a Yamaha WR250. So quite a big 4-stroke, it's an enduro bike. And it was 5 months until I could even sit on it. Oof. But that bike was sat there as a reminder when I wanted to quit.
Yeah,
when I was hurting, when I couldn't find the energy, when I just could not do my physio, that bike was sat there going, come on.
You probably, in a weird way, owe a lot to that bike then, because as you said, that was your motivation, looking at it, thinking, right, I may be here now, but that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to ride that bike. I'm going to ride it well. So, I mean, we talk to people quite often about the relationships with the bike. That they're so special, they're so individual. And I said, you've got 9, they're all going to be very, very different bikes. But if you had to pick one, I know you're not allowed, you're not picking a favorite child. Do you have a bike you look at and you go, that's the one? Or do you love them all for different reasons?
I mean, I'm going to be that like 90-year-old, if I live that old, lady that has a rally bike in my living room, because I never plan to sell my KTM 450 rally replica, the one that I did the Africa Eco Race Regional Dakar on. The emotion that I've been through on that bike and the achievement that I did on that bike, it's not worth a penny to me in money. It is so, what's that word you use? Priceless? Moneyless?
Yeah.
Priceless. Whatever. You know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep that bike.
We're going to keep that bike
because it doesn't count. So I've already got that one just on the side. I do hope to race it again, but we will see. What one bike? I'm sulking. Okay, so my mindset is like hard enduro. And that side is probably the desert, but the desert's not at home. I don't live in the desert, so it couldn't be a desert bike. Hard enduro is kind of my most love. Like, I enjoy the burn, the sweat, the fear, the whatever. But then the trials bike's so good to train for that. But then you can't really go anywhere because they're small little two strokes. So you kind of need the big adventure bike that can do both. And then you can do some road and go off road. So those five bikes would be my one.
And we're not going to mess with you, Vanessa. I'll tell you that. I'm not going to make you get you to whittle it down to. I mean, there's a great the kind of juxtaposition of what we're talking about here, because if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll note the choice of curtains behind Vanessa have got dinosaurs on, and that reflects the little one. Motherhood and motorcycling, where do they meet?
Beautifully. It's exhausting. And it's very hard. So Skylar has now been to 16 countries.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And she comes with me. I have a supportive family. Like, my parents have come. My husband's done a trip. I've got some friends that have come, godmother, godparents, etc. Because obviously she doesn't come on the bike with me. Mm. My first trip I did, well, I did UK stuff when she was like 11 weeks. So I was back on the hard enduro bike. But I did Spain at 4.5 months post. And for any dads, mums listening, where the mum is not ready to get on a motorbike, please do not pressure them. Everybody is different. Every body is different. Mm. And the postpartum journey is really, really vulnerable. So don't pressure anyone to get on a bike. For me, it felt right getting back on the bike. We can go into whether my riding is the same as well, if you'd like, in a moment. But she absolutely loves motorbikes. She gets excited when she hears the engines. She's not scared of the engines because she's been around them. She loves sitting on them. I've got her a little Strider balance bike that she sits and rocks. And she started to now scoot along and everything. I had her out on a mountain bike shotgun seat for the first time yesterday. She absolutely loves being around them. And I know she's just going to end up picking up the energy of it from me. I'm sure of it. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting doing the riding, the traveling and all of that stuff with a 16 month old. She wasn't 16 months in all these previous months. So I had a younger one, and she's not a sleeper. But for me, I would rather be exhausted, which I would be anyway, because it is exhausting, but going on the adventures and showing her the world and taking all these places, because I want to show her that you can be a mum, you can be a woman, you can keep pushing your own boundaries, pushing other people's boundaries, doing things, and little girls can do anything. You know, that C to believe, I'm trying to be that for her as such. There is a danger of being on a motorbike, which I just mentioned, and I am not the same rider that I was before I was a mum, and I don't regret that. I think it's beautiful. It's nature's way of keeping us alive. So there was an example where I was doing some hard enduro riding, and there was this massive rock face step thing. Prior to baby Vanessa, wouldn't have even considered it. It would have just been like, yeah, I reckon I can try that. Might fall off.
Yeah,
but I actually genuinely think it was perfectly within my capabilities, but I hadn't been on a bike for a while, and I just sat there and went, you know what? I've got nothing to prove right now.
Yeah,
I've got no ego. And if I did fall off and break my arm, I'd be in a really hard place trying to breastfeed, nurse, looking after a little one. I don't need that right now. Mm. And it was a beautiful feeling to realize that I was completely okay with that. Like, she is, I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I have a new obsession. It only started yesterday. I just got her a Navimo robotic LiDAR lawnmower.
Oh, yeah, nice.
It's called Daisy. It is the best thing ever. I keep looking at it on the app to see what it's doing. The lawns have never looked so good. But anyway, no, Skylar is my main obsession, though.
Good, good.
Just next to the new lawnmower.
Yeah, just next to the lawnmower, next to a cot. It's clear to me she's going to live a very happy, adventurous life with you as her mum. And I think it sounds to us that you're in a really content place, like in terms of you don't do the risky moves you might once have done. Like you said, you're in a happy place, you're enjoying your riding, you're loving being a mum. And yeah, it's lovely to see on your face, like your pride of being a mum, and also your excitement when you talk about motorbikes, because it sounds to me like you're ticking all the boxes at the moment. Life looks good.
Yeah. And I would encourage people to really remember that not everyone shares everything. I am an overshare on my social media, and I really do. But I have some pretty huge challenges going on that just aren't things that I can talk about right now with the world. They're too private. I think having children puts a lot of pressure on relationships, and
of course,
it's not all perfect and happy. And I just want to emphasize that, because for anyone listening and hearing that, they're all going to think, well, why is her life all like amazing and bubbly? And I haven't got it all sorted. And I just want to make people remember that nobody has it all sorted. And if they
do,
they're probably lying.
Yeah, of course. We all go through dark times and happy times and sad times. And let's just agree then, when your happy times are good, they're really good. Forget the other stuff. Mm. It sounds to me like when things are going well, you're nailing
it.
And we love to see that.
And do you know what, Vanessa? Just to make you even happier when things are going well, I've got a little quiz for you. A quick fire quiz. Utterly frivolous. Just fun. We've asked you lots of questions so far. You've told us so many wonderful things. This is just something a bit daft. For 60 seconds, we're going to chuck questions at you. Just quick fire. Give us your immediate answer. It's all very either or. And enjoy it. This is something we've put in latter seasons of Full Chat. Still don't know what the winner gets you. And we need to really have a meeting about that, don't we? Because we just keep saying, do your best. Here's your score. Move on.
And just so you know, a lot of thought goes into these questions with producer Dave. A lot of thought goes into these questions.
You've just made it a competition too, because you said there's a prize. I'm not competitive at all.
Yeah, this, no. Okay, don't worry. That's not you at all, is it, Vanessa?
My hair is naturally blonde too.
The prize won't be worth winning. Don't worry. Right, here we go.
Yes, so 60 seconds, quick fire questions. Vanessa Rook, are you ready?
No, but yes, let's go.
That's like life, isn't it? Are you ready? No,
stop,
but yes,
ready,
let's go. Yes, right. You're ready. You and you go with the first one. 3, 2, 1, go.
What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Horseback mounted police officer.
What posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
Spice Girls and Cars.
Italian bikes or British bikes?
Austrian.
Perfect.
Okay.
So Spice Girls or Sugar Babes?
Spice Girls, come on.
There you go.
Chocolate or crisps?
Chocolate.
Who would play you in The Girl on a Bike, the movie?
Oh my God, my dream would be like Angelina Jolie, but I look nothing like her. I just think she's goddamn gorgeous. Yeah.
Okay. Talking of gorgeous, American bikes or Japanese bikes?
Oh, American.
Indian or Chinese for a takeaway?
Indian, definitely.
Favourite album of all time?
It's probably going to be The Spice Girls. Or I quite like the Californication. Who's that by?
Red Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
Favourite animal?
Oh, there's too many. Horse, shark.
Time's up.
Coffee or tea?
Tea. I won that one.
We'll give you that last one. Don't worry about
that. Wait, was the competition how quick many we could get in a minute?
Yes.
Oh, so my brain was trying to go, how do I get this question wrong?
you were perfect. 11 you got. I think 11 is a very good score. Very good score.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good score.
The horse shark one was great. Very quick to change of direction. Horse, shark, beaver, bird. Yes.
Yeah, we'll take it. Right, Vanessa, it is time for our final question. And a lot of thought does go into this one. I can't wait to
hear
your answer.
Don't keep giving that caveat, Ewan.
You can shut your eyes and imagine, or you can keep your eyes open, but we want to know your fantasy ride, your most idyllic ride. So you could be riding anywhere in the world. You could be on any bike you choose. You could have anyone with you, or you can be on your own, and you could be listening to any soundtrack in your ear. So if you could go anywhere on a bike, where would you go? What's the route? What's the bike? What's the soundtrack? And who is with you?
I mean, honestly, I'd put myself back in a desert race and I'd be on my own. I'd be on my KTM 450. I'd be sweating, swearing, focusing on navigation. I wouldn't have any music, so I've got to focus so much on riding at pace, surviving the terrain. I'd be in the dunes. It would be hot. It would be sweaty. The sun would be high. I'd have loads of time left in the day. I'd be terrified. I'd be alive. But I'd be out there riding. I'd be back in the desert.
That's lovely. We've never had something as adventurous as that. No. Most people talk about a nice, gentle, mountainous ride, you know, relaxing on a Harley. But you are sport through and through, because you're going for it. You're challenging yourself and you're right in the dunes. I love that. That's a great one, that.
It's just the most beautiful place. It's terrifying. And with the robot navigation, do you know what robot navigation is? The piece of paper in a box on your handlebars?
No.
With lines of code. So you have some sort of devices that give you your kilometres and your compass bearing, your cap heading. And then in your road book, you'll get lines of code that give you X number of kilometres. There's some pictures, symbols, some abbreviations, which are all in French. Why would you make it any easier? And a compass bearing if it's off piece, etc. And you've basically got to follow that through the desert line by line. So if you miss one or get one wrong, you are lost. And getting lost, the only way to find out where you are is to go back to where you were last, 100% sure of where you were, reset your kilometers and have another go.
Oh, gosh.
So being fast in the desert is being accurate in navigation. You can go as fast as you want in the wrong direction, but it's completely pointless. And the navigation was one of the things that I'm quite good at. And it just adds the unbelievable amount of concentration to riding, because if you miss a single step, it could cost you an hour and a half trying to figure out where you are.
It seems to me as well, I mean, you're just built differently, Vanessa, in the most glorious way. I mean, and I suppose lost in that sense, it's like little kid in a supermarket lost. You are properly lost. So looking around going, all I can see is desert.
Yeah. Oh, and you have moments where you're like, I've been like properly lost only a couple of times, like marginally lost, where you're like, your gut knows. I feel it almost immediately. And I'm like, right, turn around, don't lose time. Yes, good. Listen to your gut. Always listen to that little voice in the back of your head. And yeah, back on track. But there's been, I think, twice where I've been like, I am lost. And if there's any wind, you can't even follow your own tracks. Where did you come from?
Yeah, wow.
If you're in an off-piece environment, yeah, it can be hard.
My word. I mean, I put Waze on to get the kids to school, and I do it every single morning. just that kind of comfort going, yeah, that's exactly where we're going.
Even we'll challenge every single day. To try and get to school tomorrow without Waze.
It's pathetic, but I feel pathetic for saying that out loud, Vanessa, given what you've just told.
No, you know what? I can see it, though, because you know where the police are and you know where the traffic's doing.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So you're just inherently too nice of a person to let me feel too bad about moaning about that. Unfortunately, I mean, you, and this has been an absolute belter, hasn't it? It's about it for this week's full chat. Powered by Bikeshow, of course, as UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bikeshow will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and so much more.
It's been absolutely brilliant. I've learned so much. I've been left inspired. You have been a brilliant guest. Thank you very much to this week's guest, the one and only girl on a bike, Miss Vanessa Rock.
Thanks so much for having me on.
It's been wonderful.
It's been a giggle, actually.
Good. Well, that's what we wanted it to be for you, Vanessa, as well as obviously the quickfire quiz. But what you've told us, I mean, it's going to stay with us forever. It's just, as Ewan says, a continued source of inspiration. And as you say, it's sometimes a bit twee from the outside looking in. And when you talk about the different rhythms of what life throws at you, please just know just how much joy and inspiration you do bring to so many people, because it's an absolute fascination of ours to watch and see what you do. So keep it up, I would say, in my motivational speaking. Okay, have I got a career in that? Absolutely not. Please don't forget to press the subscribe button on Apple, on YouTube, so you never miss an episode. Or you can find us wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, thank you very much from myself, from Prats, to all of you who tune in every week and listen. It's a joy to speak to lovely people like Vanessa for you. So until next time, take care.